Well, the samba beat sounds loudly across the world as the World Cup is up and running. Terrific games altogether, and indeed, Ireland's Euro opponents are certainly playing their part. Germany with an emphatic victory over Portugal. This is the Why Big Football Show on Radio Vera. I'm Dave O'Grady. I'm going to be talking to four Irish soccer journalists shortly on the programme. We're going to be looking at Ireland's Euro opponents and how they're faring in the World Cup. A couple of Irish players on the move as well. But first I want to look at women's soccer, as Ireland's hopes of making next year's World Cup are very much alive with a terrific 1-0 win over Croatia. I'm delighted to be joined by Dora Gorman, terrific Irish women's football player. Dora, thanks for joining us on the show. First things first, you must be delighted with that win over Croatia. We knew Croatia were a very tough team coming into this game, but to come away with a win, it probably could have been more, but no doubt the 3 points are all that matters.
Yeah, in the end it was great to get a win. They're a very tough team. I think they're bottom seeds in our group, but their recent performances have definitely shown that they're stronger than that. I mean, they only just lost out 1-0 to Russia, I think, and they had a good victory against Slovenia. So as you said, we had a good bit of the possession and everything, but in the end of the day, we got the win at the end, so happy out.
Yeah, we were speaking to a couple of the girls over the past few weeks on the show, and I know Sue Ronan really stressed the point about Croatia, the fact that they've really made it difficult for the teams towards the top of the table. Bottom seeds really hasn't been reflective of how Croatia have played, and to come there, we said at the start of the season, if Ireland could win their home games against the unseeded teams, it would be a huge boost, but we knew what Croatia were about, and to come out with the 3 points must have been a hugely positive. Of course, there was maybe worrying signs throughout the game as the frustration kind of grew as the game got later and later.
Yeah, I mean, in the first half, at halftime, we still got in, it was nil-all, but like, we were still very calm. We knew we'd had a lot of the ball, but I suppose as time goes on, you still get a bit worried that you're not going to eventually make it through. But we kept going right till the end, and we knew if we kept persisting and kept playing as we were playing, we'd get an opening, and thankfully Denise took the chance at the end.
Yeah, we controlled possession, as you said, in the first half, and you know, except we weren't creating many clear-cut chances. What was said by Sue Ronan at halftime to get the girls back out there? Because you did come out firing on all cylinders in the second half, and chances seemed to come a lot more regular, and actually the chances were a lot more clear cut, I suppose, in the second half. What was it? Was there much tweaking needed?
I think we were happy enough with the way we were keeping possession, but we just overall we just needed to do things a bit quicker, and as well just be more clinical when it came to the final third. I think we were keeping possession, but that kind of final pass we weren't getting right, so we were focusing on that for the second half, really, to get proper chances.
Indeed, there probably could have been a penalty as well, Dora. I know luck in this group, you could argue, may not have gone the Irish girls' way throughout the games, but I know there was a couple of games, the likes of the Germany game, and that we've been quite unlucky, it's probably fair to say.
Yeah, we've been, like you said, the last minute goal against Germany as well, kind of just we didn't get a draw on that, but in the game away to Croatia, we actually managed to get a last minute goal to bring that to a draw, so we've had a bit of luck ourselves as well, so it goes both ways.
Do you feel the team now, as the, you know, this group has been kind of remarkable because the team has had to travel far and wide playing games, and you know, the home games have been probably as difficult as the away games, you could probably argue, but do you think the girls, because it is a relatively young team, there's some great experienced heads in there as well, but do you think the team as a whole has come a long way and you guys have learned stuff, really different styles of playing, I'd imagine, especially for yourself and a lot of the P-Mount girls that are in the squad?
Yeah, definitely. This campaign, I mean, we've gotten to play against Germany, you know, kind of who would be winning world championships, European championships, and then getting to go to even teams like Russia who play a lot differently, and kind of the Eastern European teams. So there's been a lot of different, like, along the way, we've definitely had to face different types of styles. So I think we've been meeting up very regularly as well. So we've kind of keep just progressing as a team, and it's really kind of showing now the way we're playing. We're able to play more attacking and be more comfortable with ourselves and the ball, because we know we can play against all these different types of teams. So definitely, it's been a great experience this whole campaign. Hopefully we can just keep pushing on now.
Indeed. And yourself, it must have been a great experience, you know, the group games and that, because you did come up with, you played a key role in the goal that got the win, and it's probably something that the team has learned towards the end of games to, you know, really go for that, and, you know, the how priceless late goals are when they might not seem like they're coming.
Yeah, I think you learn from some of the better teams you play as well. They'll keep going. Like against Germany, they were just going to keep going till the end, and that's the difference sometimes between some of the better teams. They'll get that goal at the end when they need it. So I think shows we really have matured as a team as well. We're not as naive, and we'll keep going. And, you know, it was great to see that coming through.
It is
the
indeed.
End.
I think it's so many people are behind this Irish team. And you're now third in the group, and you travel to second place Germany or Russia on Thursday with just 5 points separating the teams. A lot of people would say, yes, it is a must-win game or that, but how difficult is this challenge for the girls?
Yeah, it's obviously going to be massively difficult going all the way over to Russia, but I think for us there's no real pressure on us as such. We're not expected to do anything, so I think if we get over, we get a win, it just puts all the pressure back on Russia. And I mean, as we've seen, anything can happen in this group. Some of the bottom teams are more than capable of taking points off everyone in the group, so I think we'll go there with no pressure on us, but we can definitely get a result if we play as we know we can.
You must be delighted with the coverage this team has gotten, Dora. I know Sue Ronan was certainly very happy with, there seemed to be quite a good bit of media attention. Of course, we want to get more of the games live on television, you know, for people. But in terms of the coverage surrounding Twitter and social media and Facebook and that, there seems to be a real, you know, a real kind of a bit of a hype around it. And particularly the crowds that are going out to Tala Stadium for the home games watching it. It must be great for yourself to have such a good crowd behind the team.
Yeah, it's really been massive. I think since during this campaign we made kind of Tala our home stadium, so we're playing all our home games there now. So it's really like we've got a good fan base. They seem to be coming through for every match. So it's really like even from the start of the campaign, the numbers are growing, and it really makes a massive difference when you're in those tight games and stuff and having all the support behind you. And I mean, the media coverage has been great as well. It just seems to be growing and growing with the results we're getting. So it's really, really encouraging, really positive for us.
For you yourself, Dora, it's been quite an exciting career already. Now you're with Piemont United, and I think you've made a good few appearances for Ireland. And I think you're only 21 at this stage. So a long career ahead of you. Do you feel that you've learned so much now, because particularly playing at club level with such experienced heads there as well, and real quality there, do you think it's been such a key role in your success and indeed getting into this Irish team and continuing to play?
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, there's a good few young players on the team now, but like when I was coming to Piemont and stuff, they were just after qualifying for the out of the group from Champions League, and playing with those players week in, week out, definitely made the step up from underage international to senior a lot easier to take. But it's nice because there's a good group of us here who are all around the same age and are all young coming through together, and we get to play with experienced players but also have that kind of youth kind of thing. We're all friends together, but no, it's been really great. And just the past year we've really kind of come together as a team, and everyone gets on so well, but on and off the pitch, so there's really good atmosphere, really good vibe around the place.
Yeah, it's good for yourself bringing a Galway vibe to the team, no doubt. It's good to have it, the girls kind of spread out from all over Ireland, and you know, I know a lot of them are actually playing abroad in the Scandinavian countries, and that it must be quite a mix in the squad.
Yeah, there's kind of, I think over the past recent years, there's more home-based players coming through as opposed to players who maybe would have played in America and stuff like that. But we have a few players playing in Norway, Sweden, Germany, and then all the home-based players. Everything, it's really like everything kind of complements each other, coming from different people who will be used to playing against some of the European teams in those leagues as well. So they kind of bring in that experience as well. But no, it's great. It's really, you get to learn from all the different types of styles and stuff as well, so kind of everything comes together. It's nice.
It's exciting. Am I right by saying, Dora, that you made a little bit of history back in 2012? You became the first woman to play in the men's UCD Med Cup. I understand. I certainly had a pretty good team back then, no doubt.
I don't know. That was just a bit of a kind of fun thing in the college. It wasn't too important, but yeah, no, it's just competition amongst all the different years in medicine UCD.
Yeah.
So
I'd say they were very happy to have an international soccer player on their side.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. They're good.
Fantastic. Enjoyable. It's exciting times anyway, Dora. Yeah. Just before I let you go, your plans for yourself for the future, or that, are you just planning to kick on with Piemont and playing more games for Ireland? Of course, this international experience that you're getting at such a young age, it's going to benefit you hugely going forward. I mean, it's priceless, really.
Yeah, it's just to be able to be playing against these teams at this age is really, really going to hopefully benefit me in the future, like you said. But I'm still in college moment now, so I have another few years there. So I'll be sticking around here anyway, playing hopefully in the National League, and hopefully it'll just grow and grow, and hopefully we can get more coverage as well on a club level in the National League in Ireland coming from, hopefully, the successes of the international team. So hopefully that can grow, and it's getting better all the time, the standards of the matches and everything. So that's hopefully we can push on from here.
The colleges, Dora, they're very accommodating for girls your age and that are playing at such a high level. That's a key element, I'd say, to the success. And as you said, to the fact that there's so many young players coming through at the same time.
Yeah, definitely. Our college in UCD, as well, from my experience, you know, we maybe would be away around exam time or missing different sort of practicals and stuff, and they've all been very accommodating. Otherwise, it would be very difficult to try, and because we're not professional players, try and get time off from college and stuff like that. It wouldn't be easy. But thankfully, they're all very accommodating. Everyone just wants to make it as easy for us as we can, so we're able to concentrate on our football when we're here. So
it's certainly great to hear. Dora Gorman, thanks a million for joining me. I wish you the very best of luck this week taking on Russia. I know it's going to be a huge game for the girls, and the whole country is going to be behind you, and I hopefully you come back with a favourable result and a good performance. Thanks a million.
Thank you very much.
If you'd like to sponsor, advertise, or simply get involved with any of the shows on talkingsport.org, drop us an email to dave@talkingsport.org. That's dave@talkingsport.org. The samba drums are sounding loudly as the World Cup in Brazil is at a flying start. Great games blowing the South African World Cup out of the water in terms of the quality of matches and the excitement already at such early stages. One thing's for sure though, we wish Ireland were there. Delighted to be joined by James Carew of Pogue McGull, Neil McDonough of Near FM, and Pete Kelly of ExtraTime.ie. Lads, thanks for joining me on the show. A lot to talk about, and I suppose from an Irish point of view, a few things as well. James, to come to yourself first, we've been watching the World Cup and Germany had a fantastic win over Portugal there. Portugal, of course, down to 10 men, but Germany kind of casually strolled to a nice little 4-0 win with an impressive hat-trick for Müller. We've got them in the Euros coming up, in the Euro qualifiers coming up. I know a lot of people are saying that they're going to win the group, no doubt about that, but is this real evidence here that, you know, they really are out of our league? And that's being kind.
Hi, Dave. Yeah, I think they really showed their credentials today. And there are a lot of people's bet to win the World Cup outright, albeit with the kind of qualifying statement that European teams don't win in South America. So, look, Germany looked awesome today. And your point is right. They're going to be favourites when they come up against us, as they always will be. But what I would say is, under the new management, and especially with Roy Keane as part of the setup, they won't be coming out with any kind of statements like we're going to be steamrolled by Germany or a draw would be a good result. I think O'Neill and Keane have to set their stall out differently to try and take advantage of Germany. But look, it's going to be a massive order to try and get anything from them, and we could potentially be meeting them as world champions, Dave. You never know.
That would certainly put bums on seats in the Aviva Stadium. Neil McDonough, to come to yourself on this, I was looking at the German players, the likes of Götze and Müller, and even their not so great players, the likes of Khedira. He still puts in a good shift, and Ozil, you know, to be able to bring off Ozil and bring on Schrule, I thought that was remarkable. I mean, they've got strength in depth as well. They've quality all over, a well-oiled machine. And that's what you'd expect from a German team. Maybe it's going to be a little bit reminiscent of the fantastic German teams of the past.
Yeah, I was very impressed with them today. I think the first 30, 40 minutes are the time to judge them, because after the sending off, it's hard to judge, because they were playing against the Portuguese side down to 10 men and 3-0 down. But definitely for the first 30, 35 minutes, they were very impressive. And I can just imagine them pulling our centre-halves all over the place with their playing. They didn't really play a striker, although Müller did play up top, but he was able to move at any time. Goethe moving one way, Ozil coming in as well. So they were using the tactics, I suppose, that won the World Cup for Spain 4 years ago, playing without a striker. And it's funny, Spain run into trouble when they go and play a striker against Holland. But yeah, I just look, I know Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane, as I was saying there, will talk it up, but our players aren't good enough to deal with the likes of Germany, and it'll be the games against Scotland and Poland really are going to dictate how we get on in the group.
Will indeed. Pete Kelly of extratime.ie. They tore apart Portugal today, embarrassed them, very hard to take for the Portuguese. But having said that, this Portugal team recently demolished us 5-1 in the USA. I'm trying to think and come to terms with it, Pete. Where are we at this stage?
Well, I don't think that the games, and you mentioned the game, you know, the Costa Rica's games, the Italian match, the, you know, the game against Portugal, I don't think they mean a toss when it comes to the European Championships. This was just the benefit of those games for Ireland was Martin O'Neill being able to get the guys in camp, as it were, like, you know, to use the kind of rugby parlance, where he had them in there for, you know, he had them for the best part of a month, and he was able to do some stuff with them, and he'd see how they were at close quarters. Portugal were destroyed today by, you know, a well-oiled German machine, as the lad said there. The Portuguese, what they were today, was they were exposed big time for the fact that, you know, they've got several really good players, but there's some glaring, you know, they've got some glaring deficiencies as well. And that's been the case with Portuguese teams over the years. And you know, they've always had one or two outstanding world-class type players, but then they've always had a couple of Wallies in there who let them down. And that Pepe, you know, how he's, you know, I don't know. He's an idiot of the highest order, surely.
That's maybe a fair point. I don't know. I don't want to go down that road, Pete. But having said that, we look at that German team and the quality that they really have and the quality that's coming off the bench. And if they, as Neil says, if they are meeting Ireland as world champions, which would be a remarkable feat altogether, but they're going to have even more confidence. And, you know, are we simply going to be brushed aside? James doesn't believe it. James says with the new management team, there's not going to be any talk of, oh, we're going to, a draw would be a great result. We'll be out there to compete.
I think we're always going to give them a game, because I think that's the mentality of the Irish team when, you know, when they go out and play. And I know we got, you know, murdered when we played them in the trap era, but we've always given them a decent game, even though sometimes the scoreline mightn't reflect it in the end. The one thing about the Germans is they keep their shape so well. I was watching the game there against the Portuguese, like, even when it was done and dusted, they still kept their shape so well, and when they got the ball, they destroyed Portugal from the point of view of they held the ball so well that the Portuguese were on their knees after an hour. So the Germans are always going to be formidable because they're technically very good. They're great athletes, and it's very hard to drag them out of position on the pitch.
Yeah, drag them out of the position. One of the things, James, that I seem to... It was a little bit evidence in our friendly with Portugal, but any type of team that plays a type of tic-tac passing possession football, it seems to be our Achilles heel. They seem to be able to rip us apart. I think, are we allergic to the tic-tac when teams are able to do it against us? We see, as Pete was saying, our players dragged all over the place.
Yeah, well, that's a deeper question, Dave, about the type of players we produce. And let's be honest, Ireland... The Irish system doesn't produce Irish players. They go to England, and the English system produces them for our national team. So we're technically inferior to a lot of these countries, as we saw even under Trapattoni, where so-called lower-ranked teams would come to Dublin and play us off the pitch in a technical sense in midfield. So what we want from O'Neill and Keane, which we never got from Trapattoni because he tried to impose a system on these players, as we all know, is we need them to work on other traits and other strengths, which is to close down space very quickly, to close down players and pressure players so that teams that can play better football don't have time to do it, which is traditionally the way Ireland always got results. Going back to the put them under pressure type days, or if you go back through Ireland's history, really, any major result that we got, if you even want to look more recent times, which we always talk about, the Dutch win at Lansdowne Road was getting in the faces of teams and having a go. So O'Neill made the point that we were going up against a couple of Champions League winners just a couple of weeks earlier when we played Portugal against an all-championship defence. Now, I sincerely hope when the qualifier starts in September, we don't have a all-championship defence, because we're just going to get ripped apart again. So O'Neill needs to, not in the way Trapp would express the limitations of the team, he needs to recognise them, and he needs to come up with a plan to counteract it, because we're not going to get a result otherwise. And like we said before, Germany will just play us off the park again if we don't come up with something to counteract what are technically better teams than us.
Just to pick you up on a point there you mentioned, James, you were talking about our players being educated, we'll say, through the English system and the English way of playing football. And maybe a lot of people will say that the English system is flawed, and the English themselves, as good as their team are, player for player, I mean, their culture, their football culture, is quite a bit behind the rest of Europe. But we've seen against Italy, they perhaps maybe did deserve a draw. But having said that, Italy, for the most of it, were very comfortable. You know, they could spray the ball around. English players had run themselves into the ground trying to keep up with the game itself. It's not necessarily an Irish team, but it's an Irish thing. But maybe it's the fact that our players are playing in England and the type of football that they are being exposed to, James. Is that a fair point?
Well, that's really the point I was trying to make, Dave, is that because we don't have a system in Ireland, we're relying on the English system to create players for us, because we don't have a structure or full-time league here, fully professional league, where players can progress through the ranks, go to a senior club or an academy here. We're relying on England to create our players. Now, you're absolutely right. The English team would say they struggle. England will always produce a gem of a player like, I was going to say Rooney, but that type of a player, Dave, a little bit special, Wilshere, which would be technically gifted. Even Sterling looks like he's going to be a great player based on, or he certainly had a brilliant performance the other night. So England's best players will be technically better than us, but they come through the same kind of system of, if you look outside the top half of the Premier League, you wouldn't exactly call some of those teams easy on the eye. Like, the joke is always made that you can't do it on a Thursday night at Stoke. Half our players play with Stoke, Dave, and there's a reason that phrase came about.
Neil McDonough, shed some light on this. Have we hit the nail on the head? The football culture is the problem. It's not just an Irish problem, but the English have a similar problem, albeit they have a higher quality of players, but it's still the same, you know, it's still the same drum that they're beating on the football pitch. They can run themselves into the ground, but at the end of the day, I mean, you had to even look just back at Pirlo. I mean, he was casually able to spray the ball around, and he only needed to run when he had to. He wasn't killing himself, and yet at the end of it, I looked at Pirlo and I thought that maybe he could have played another 90 minutes, whereas, say, the likes of Raheem Sterling was in absolute bits because he was up and down the wings like a yo-yo.
Yeah, Pirlo let the ball do the work. It's that old phrase, just let the ball do the work. And I was looking at stats after the game, and I think Pirlo had 107 passes and he completed 104 of them. I mean, you compare that to Steven Gerrard, who had a decent completion percentage, but I think he only had something like 67 passes. So Pirlo was getting on the ball, he was playing nice 1-2s and just basically controlling the ball and taking a breather on the ball. We don't seem to have that ability, and England don't seem to have the ability. Although we are lucky, we do have a player like Wes Hoolan, and I'm not going to compare him to Pirlo, but he does like to get on the ball and keep possession. But the style of football, in fact, you can go back, I think James was mentioning there about our good days when we put them under pressure in Italia 90. The problem is the rules have changed since then. And that a lot of the rules changed after that 1990 World Cup, because players like Mick McCarthy could get away with kicking players like Georgi Hadji. And FIFA had to come in and change the rules. And that's why the technical player now is rewarded better than he was back in 1990. So I'm not sure if Jack Charlton was around today, would he be able to get away with the style of football that he had Ireland playing, even though we had much better players then as well, who just possibly weren't allowed to express themselves either because of the system Charlton played. So it's a tough one. We don't really have the players to be playing really good football, and I don't think the rules of football allow us to play the put-them-under-pressure style that Charlton had back in the day.
Yeah, I would say, Dave, that, you know, just to join in on what James has said earlier on about the British, the game, they produce our players, you know, once the guys go and play pro as well. And it bears out a lot what Neil was saying there. I think up to under 15 and 16, I've seen quite a lot of these young players. We're technically as good as what's in England. I think the big difference is they've got like 10 times the number of players we have, as have a lot of the European countries. But it was when the guys go to the professional academies at 17, you can't sign a contract if you're 17. They go over there quite a bit between their 15 and 17, the guys who are going to make it, as it were, as pros. And they get indoctrinated over there, and the guys are interested in winning. And there's very few clubs where they're prepared to sit and wait and develop the players and put out teams in their under 17 league, even though in theory that result is supposed to be irrelevant in those Premier Leagues and the Championship Leagues for those clubs. And the coaches that are looking after those academy teams, they're measured on winning stuff and producing one or two players. So they, you know, their focus is not right. We'll never have a full-time professional game here because the population just couldn't possibly pay for it. And so we are going to be, struggling in that respect as we go forward. But I think it's a pity that some of the players go backwards, even though they go on and become pros. But I think that is a problem for us, and we're going to have to deal with it in some way or other, because it is the big market. It's on our doorstep, and that's where most of our players that we produce that come through the Irish under 15, 16 teams, that's where they're going to go and play.
Let me hit you with this one, Pete. I was listening to Jim Beglin last night when he was watching the Bosnia game, the Bosnia defeat to Argentina. Messi, fantastic goal or that. But one of the great things I thought about Bosnia, it was their first time in a World Cup, but it's their first time in there with technical players. They might not be great powerhouses or you know, they won't have somebody that's going to blow you away. Okay, they have Dzeko, who didn't particularly do too good last night. But Jim Beglin described them as a team of technicians. Now, I seen that. You know, they were well able to play the game. They weren't afraid to get on the ball. They liked the feel of the ball. What are Bosnia doing that we're not doing? Is it just their location, their geographical location, and the type of football that players from Bosnia get to play? I know they're quite a spread out bunch of lads around Europe.
Well, I think there's a big cultural thing there. They're one of the many republics now that used to wake up, the former Yugoslavia, as they call it. And, you know, what you had is you have Serbia, you have Croatia, you have Bosnia, you have Slovenia, Macedonia, and all these guys are in there. But when they were all Yugoslavia, going back to the 60s and 70s, they were always brilliant technical players. So you're having, this is the fifth generation, or, you know, sixth generation of guys out there. And the way they play football is they get on the ball, they pass it, their first touch is good. So when they're small kids learning to play the game, you know, there's nobody on the sideline screaming at them to hoof the ball as far as they possibly can. And that's a really important thing, you know. So I think it's a cultural thing with the Bosnians. They're a smaller population, but, you know, you see it in Serbia and Croatia and those as well. But that's what was Yugoslavia, and they always had talented players. It's a cultural thing, like the Brazilians or the Germans to a lesser extent.
Yeah, Dave, and I was just going to say, only Dzeko, I think, in the starting 11 for Bosnia actually grew up in Bosnia. The rest of them all grew up out in Germany and Canada and various other places. So I'm not sure we could actually learn a huge amount from the coaching structures of Bosnia, because as it was being said there, culturally they always had the tradition of playing great football in Yugoslavia. In fact, they were called the Brazilians of Europe many times, and the Red Star Belgrade was made up of the Serbian team was made up of players from all over Yugoslavia. But most of their players didn't grow up in Bosnia, so where they're getting their coaching is largely in places like Germany and Canada and various other places.
Is there not an argument there, Neil, though, that from an Irish point of view, and I've said it a lot of times on the Why Big Football show, that our players should perhaps attempt to play outside of the British Isles, as we'll say. You know, they should attempt to play in different countries. I know we have Darren O'Dea playing over in Ukraine, and I think Killian Sheridan was in Bulgaria playing for Sofia and that. But if our players were to try themselves out on the continent, they would develop completely different skills. Or is the damage already done in terms of growing a player? You know, they should have been doing that from kids. And of course, they would never have gotten the chance to play in that type of environment as kids.
I think it's a simple. It comes down to money. Simply, players are going to go where the most money is, and there's a lot of average players who are playing in England who are on decent money, and they're on more money than they would be if they were playing in the Dutch first division or if they were playing in the French first division, and even in the Championship you get decent money. So unfortunately, a player is going to, like Wes Hoolan played for Livingston, then he was playing in Norwich. That's where they're going to play, because he'll get more money there than he will get in France or Portugal or Holland. And at the end of the day, you're going to go where the most money is. I'm going to go where the most money is. Yeah. That's what people do. So I don't think there's much we can do about that. But I do agree that it would be great if some of the players who maybe are lost to the game in England, if maybe they could find homes in France and Holland or Portugal. But Those countries and the clubs in those countries don't seem to be looking for Irish players.
Dave, that's exactly right, James. There, the opportunities for these guys to go to the continent will be very few and far between. This week we have the Kennedy Cup, which was the national interleague under 14 competition, is on down in UL all week. With all the, it's the cream of the crop of the 13-year-olds in Ireland playing, and I guarantee you, there's about 150 scouts from the UK down there every day, and you won't find any from continental Europe, and that's. That's an indication.
Yeah, it's quite disappointing, really. Although, having said that, we're admiring the technical ability of the Balkans countries. I know the point was made about Brazil not having a Modric-type player, so maybe it's not just an Irish problem and British problem. Maybe it's going far and wide. Maybe this Eastern European type of way is going to take over. James, to focus more on our recent performances, I know there's been a lot of negative coverage in the media about our hammering in a friendly to Portugal. I will stress that it was a friendly. As Pete says, it means absolutely nothing. I know James McLean came out on Twitter and mentioned, as a joke, just to rile a few people up, that Ireland had drawn with Costa Rica and Italy. And we've looked at Costa Rica and Italy in the World Cup, and they've looked pretty good, James. You know, can we take confidence out of that at all? Or would you go along with Pete in the sense that it was a draw, don't mind that?
I disagree with Pete slightly, but I think in a way Martin O'Neill, or like any manager would, when the qualifiers would come around, would say the Costa Rica game and the Italy games do matter and the Portugal one doesn't, Dave, because you have to take the positive. But they were encouraging performances, and you do need to say, look, we held an experimental Irish team, which it was, held Italy. And we were actually, or certainly the media were disappointed with Costa Rica, the Costa Rica scoreline, and a lot of Irish supporters were as well, but they were kind of saying, why are we only drawing with this team? So any manager has to focus on the positives. And we spoke about it before in that, is O'Neill using these games to impart a system? And we weren't sure at the start, but I think going back over all the games he's been in charge, while he may not be getting the results or wins, we can definitely see progression in the performance of the team. The fact that Wes Hoolahan has played a part in all of O'Neill's games really says something, when, as we all know, he couldn't get next or near the squad under Trapattoni. So there's definitely a change in philosophy. And even though the point was made that we were hammered by Portugal, but we were still trying to do the right things. We were still trying to play football, keep possession, pass. If it's okay, it's better to lose 5-1 trying to play football than lose 5-1 or 6-1 as we did to Germany under Trapattoni, which we weren't playing football, Dave. We were playing something else entirely.
But then again, on another day, James, one would have to point back to taking on Russia in Moscow and offering absolutely nothing in the lines of attack, but coming away with a draw. Now, if we had tried...
Yeah, but nine times out of ten, Dave, we'd go there and get spanked. So we're talking about O'Shea Given and Richard Dunne having a game of his life. But the thing about Richard Dunne is that it's always last gasp defending from Richard Dunne, because it has to be. It's always throwing your body in the way, clearing off the line, because the shot has not stopped further out the field. So we were blessed to take a result from that. And I would be loath to think Martin O'Neill is going to base his team on let's park the bus, to use the phrase. And I don't think he is, because we've seen that Houlihan has played a part, as I said, in every game. We still have Andy Reid to come back. James McCarthy didn't play a part in those. So I think he's going to try and play football. But his remark about an all-championship defence is worrying, because, as we've discussed so often before, the bulk or a lot of our squad is playing at a lower level. So he has said himself, when the qualifiers come around, we're going to be missing one or two of our really top players, and we need guys to come in. But so in that sense, you have to say, put faith in a guy and give him a little word of encouragement and say, you played against Italy and you did very well, and don't even mention the Portuguese game, Dave.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Neil, is there any players in that Irish team that you feel proved their worth to Martin O'Neill? I know we have that game against Oman coming up in August, but in these, we were providing, it's probably fair to say, we were just providing a little training session for the likes of Italy and Costa Rica and Portugal, who were all going to the World Cup. But is there any players that in there you felt really took their chance?
I suppose the obvious one is Jeff Hendrick. If you're to look at the Ireland midfield, the way it looks under Martin O'Neill, it looks like he's going to be playing Wes Hoolan, as James was saying. James McCarthy is a certainty. So there really is one place going in that midfield. And Myler and Hendrick and Whelan are probably fighting for that last spot. Maybe Hendrick will be used as backup for James McCarthy. Who knows? But I thought Hendrick was probably the best performer of the guys we hadn't seen a huge amount of before. So that was encouraging. I think the back four still is going to be, hopefully, is going to be Coleman, O'Shea, Dunn and Wilson. I hope not to see Ward at left back anytime soon. And I know that sounds harsh, but that's the way. I think he just gets exposed every time. I thought McGeady at times against Costa Rica looked good, especially when he was running at them through the middle. There wasn't a huge amount of encouraging signs, I don't think. Definitely the Italy game was the best game. And in an ideal world, if we're going to wear rose-tinted glasses, we'll all look at that game and see the signs from that one. But you then can't go and forget about the Portugal and Costa Rica second half either, when we were playing against 10 men and Campbell really destroyed us on the right-hand side. I'd say Jeff Hendrick was definitely the most encouraging player to come from the three or four matches we played in the end of season tour.
Pete, Jeff Hendrick, how about that? Do you think he's one who has put his hand up now for selection to say to the manager, yes, I can play competitive football? Who do you think will actually make the break into that squad, especially that centre midfield partnership? Because we know that James McCarthy has got that. You know, it is his position. But and I raised the question on last week's show: is Glenn Whelan's position maybe up for grabs? And the majority of you guys said yes, it was.
It might be up for grabs, but I would think that, you know, somebody, you know, it's almost like when in the old boxing world, you know, the champion had to get knocked out before he lost his crown. You know, so I think somebody's gonna. Whelan's got such experience, and he's so dogged, and he'd die for you on the pitch and that type of stuff. And that's going to give him an edge over the younger guys. I do think that what Kendrick has shown is that he's shown consistency. And if you're going to put somebody into your engine room and the middle of the pitch on your international team, you're going to want consistency. And even though, you know, in the trap days, Whelan was consistent. He was there all the time. Might have been very boring on the ball and didn't get up the pitch much, but he provided that sense of security, I think, that they were looking for. So Hendrick could be in there. I agree with that McCarthy is a certainty. I agree with Neil's back four. I think we're in trouble if we have to play without any of those four guys. And then it's permutation and combination of how you slot people in to get the best out of it. I don't know, the old man match won't be much of an indicator of anything. And then, but it's when they get away to Georgia in the first game, that's where we're really going to get an idea of the thinking that O'Neill and Keane have on how we should progress. And if we go and win there, that will be a huge boost, because it's an away game, even if Georgia are really not that much cop.
What, but if we go and win, Pete, I mean, some people are suggesting that in recent times we've started to look like our 70th place world ranking, and to go to Georgia and go to Tbilisi and pick up a draw would be a decent result. Is that just nonsense if we have any kind of aspirations?
Yeah, I think we have to go and win there, and I think we can win there. You know, but I think we've got to feel that we can beat Georgia at home and away, because we're probably going to say, well, the Germans are probably going to win the group, whether they're the World Cup champions or not, and then it'll be a dogfight with the Poles, that type of thing. So I think we've got to go and beat the Georgians away, and then hope that, you know, they can take a point off the Poles out there, that kind of stuff, you know.
James, to go beat the Georgians away, it's not going to be any easy task. And, you know, looking at we know how the world rankings are flawed. We've been watching Switzerland, who did get the win in the end, but they're in sixth place in the world rankings. We're all the way down in 70th. Would you agree with Pete? Do you think we can get that win out there in Tbilisi?
Yeah, I do, Dave. I think for the reasons we've been talking about. Okay, we said there wasn't so many signs of encouragement, but I think we are playing a different style of football under Trapattoni. And Trapattoni, okay, we didn't play them in Georgia, but we beat them under Trapattoni away in Germany, wasn't it? In the first game of his qualifiers. So, you know, if we stick with this philosophy where we're going to try and play football, I think we are in a false position in the rankings, but as in, if any team, whenever a qualifying draw comes around, teams don't want to get Ireland. Now, in recent years, they haven't been that afraid of getting us at all, and probably that has changed somewhat. So we need to get back to a position where teams are afraid to get Ireland, because
they love playing us in the Aviva Stadium, Lansdowne Road. That's
everybody
for sure.
Loved playing us under Trapattoni, Dave. But I think teams won't underestimate us with O'Neill and Keane in the dugout, because they will expect a return to Irish teams of old, in that we will get in their face, which, as we spoke about earlier, is the only way we can get a result against teams technically better than us, and teams like Georgia and as we've seen before, possess players who are technically more skilled than ours. You know, this kind of idea that we've a God-given right to beat teams who we perceive we're better than because our players play in the Premier League is a bit of a nonsense, and we need to start showing that. But yes, our first 11 can get a win over there and can qualify, in fact, Dave. But it's when you lose players from the first 11 that we need guys. Ireland always needs players to play above themselves. So we haven't seen that for about 6 years, and we need the new manager to do that. That's about motivation, Dave. It's not so much about you know, you can overcome technical inferiority with motivation and having a go, and that's what we need to see.
And do you think, James, just before I move on, do you think we've been any of our guys will be able to learn about this type of play by watching teams at the World Cup, you know, the likes of Costa Rica giving it a go and not fearing a team that should be superior to them?
Unfortunately, Dave, the only way to have learned that would have been to be in it and playing against them. I often found it curious that people would say, you know, we didn't qualify for this, so we're building for the next tournament. You know, the best way to prepare for a tournament is to be in the last one. Now, we were in the Euros, and those players wouldn't have learned a hell of a lot of that. We're not in this. It's up to the manager, really, to learn about the opposition, because he did make the point this week, Martin O'Neill, that he wants the players to take what they've learned in camp in the trip to the USA and apply it at their club level, which is really what we need to see. I read some quotes from Anthony Pilkington this week saying he hopes Martin O'Neill builds the team around Wes Hoolahan, which, yes, in theory, that would be excellent. Let's build it around a ball player like Wes. Wes Hoolihan mightn't be in the first team when the Premier League starts again, as Anthony Pilkington wasn't either. So the guys need to be playing football and proving that they can get in this, what we hope is a new look Irish team with a new philosophy. And we haven't seen that in the past or in recent years, you know. But the problem there was Trapattoni stuck with players who weren't playing for their clubs.
He did indeed. I want to move on, lads, and I want to look at our goalkeeping situation. And Neil, I'm going to come to you on this because Kieran Westwood, he's been linked with a free transfer move to Manchester City to be Joe Hart's number two. He actually started out in the academy there in Manchester City. Would this be a good move? We always talk, David Ford is our number one at the moment for the foreseeable future, I'd imagine. Rob Elliott, of course, he's the number two at Newcastle. What do you think about this? Westwood going to City, would it be a good move?
Personally, no, I don't think it is a good move because I think Westwood needs first team football, and there's no way that an Irish keeper is ever going to move the England number one, even if he is Hart. So I don't think it would be a good move for him. He needs to go somewhere, even if it's at a lower level in the Championship. First team football for a goalkeeper is absolutely important. You can get away with it sometimes if you're like Wes Hoolan and you're maybe a ball player who comes in and plays two or three games and then doesn't play for a while. But goalkeeping, if you're not playing week in, week out, it doesn't work. So I think he's no chance of getting back into the starting lineup if he goes to Man City. He'll only be going from one bench to another. He'll probably be better paid for doing it.
I think, Dave, that I think that if he goes to Man City, he's only going there for money, as Neil said. I think it from a football point of view, from his career point of view, I think it would be absolute lunacy if he does it. And I don't think it's something that Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane would be interested in having, you know, what might be their backup goalkeeper and maybe their future goalkeeper just going to somewhere to sit on the bench and pick up a big paycheck. You know, I think one of the things that has kept Fordy, you know, so fresh over the years is that he has played all the time and he's always wanted to play. And I'm kind of biased here because I know Fordy quite well. And, he's just signed a new 3-year contract at Millwall, which is great for him because he's going to play every single week. And that's what the guys would want from Westwood.
I think David Ford actually got Player of the Year at Millwall, if I'm not mistaken, keeping them up for that. A terrific performance. We're delighted to be joined by YBIG's John O'Neill on the show. John, we're talking about the Irish goalkeeping situation at the moment. It's a little bit of a worry. There was news this week that Kieran Westwood has been linked with a free transfer move to City, where he started out at the academy with the view to being the number two. Is the Irish goalkeeper situation a little bit concerning? We don't have any Premier League keepers. If you count Rob Elliott, who's really the number two at Newcastle, and I don't think he's going to be making, you know, a breakthrough anytime soon. What do you think? Are you a little bit worried?
Yeah, I think it is from Westwood's point of view. Anyway, if he's gone to Man City, obviously he's not going to get in there. He's not going to play. I wouldn't be too concerned about the type of club that the goalkeeper is playing for. I mean, given for a lot of years was at Newcastle when they would have been down the end, but down towards the bottom of the table. But that kind of meant he got a lot of practice in. So it kind of did him all right as opposed to doing nothing for games. And I suppose a lot of times for Ireland, he would have been busy as well. So, but I think it's important that he's getting game time for a goalkeeper. For Westwood, I'd rather see him go somewhere where he's going to play, even that if that is down the Premier League or even Championship. Anywhere is better to be playing regular football and to be sharp, because you need to be sharp when you come into these international games, especially for a goalkeeper. It'd be a lot harder from just to come into it. So I would say that's definitely more important.
He is a good shot stopper though, John, isn't he? We've seen him had some fine games when he was in the Sunderland side, and you know he was quite reliable. It's just been kind of hard luck on him, you know, and then we did see him come in for Ireland. I think he played in that ill-fated clash at home to Germany, where we conceded a hell of a lot of goals. He looked quite rusty in that. Playing week in, week out is what he needs, because he is a fine keeper at the end of the day.
Yeah, he is. He's had some good performances. I think the problem with the goalkeepers for Ireland as well, Shea Given was never inclined to give up the goalkeeper's jersey for friendlies or anything like that. I know Keane kind of had a bit of a pop at him, maybe a bit unfairly, a bit harshly, but there is a bit of truth to it as well. You need to have
Dean
players.
Kiley had a bit of a problem with that because he came... Dean Kiley would came back actually to play for under Trapattoni, and you know there was a couple of friendlies, and you know it was as soon as Shea said, "Oh, I actually want to play. I want to play a half or 60 minutes or something like that." There was no problem. Shea would always play, and I think that was something that kind of that's been going on for years. Had gone on for years, John.
Yeah, and Given was at a stage where he didn't really need the practice, or he didn't. We knew what he could do. We knew he was going to be number one, and everybody, Given knew, Kiley knew, all the team knew that when it comes to the important games, Given was going to play. So you could say it was either his enthusiasm to play for Ireland, or it was a little bit of selfishness, maybe wanted to play. And in fairness to Given, I mean, I don't want to bash him too much. He's been a great servant to Ireland, and he saved us an awful lot of times. But in the European Championships 2 years ago, he should have known that he wasn't able to play. He clearly wasn't fit. He at that stage of his career, he knew his body better than anyone else. And he would have known he wasn't 100%. He wasn't even 80%, I'd say. The way he reacted to a couple of the goals, you know, at a crucial stage, I know, yes, he deserved, the player that deserves to play in a championship like that at some stage. But if he's not fit, it's the whole team suffered as a consequence. And even the back line, I know we didn't go into it in great form or anything, but the back line, they know there's a goalkeeper like that behind them. That's not going to give them any confidence. And it kind of shattered the whole team as well. Whereas Given used to always be sort of a rock at the back, and everybody knowing that they've got him behind us, so it would give it an extra boost to the defence. But over in Poland, he just wasn't at it at all. And he should have known that, really, I think.
Yeah, I think a lot of Irish fans, John, will agree with you there. It really is, what do you say, your chance to play at a Euros for Ireland, or, you know, to kind of confess and tell the manager, I don't feel 100%. James, to come to you, and the Irish team actually had Ryan Mara, who's based out in the USA, train with them. Now, and I think Ryan was involved with the USA teams at underage level, or that there's a bit of speculation that he might transfer, but again, I don't know if he had been getting his game for his club. I think it was either New England Patriots or somebody
the Red,
like that.
The Red Bulls, I think, Dave. Red Bulls. I think he even wore the Red Bulls gear in Ireland training.
Is there, you know, are we that open to taking keepers at this stage? We have to be as open as possible.
Yeah, why not, Dave? I think with the advances in the quality of MLS, and especially, it really started with Beckham, that when he went there, everybody said, oh, he's going, he's got retirement fund, he's going over to LA. But he stayed in the England team, and he came back and had very successful spells at AC Milan, then PSG. And then Robbie followed him, and Robbie Keane has shown that he's prepared to fly back and forth. So the Atlantic is not that big stretch of water anymore that it used to be. I know we're going to talk shortly about, or you're going to mention Damien Duff. I think if Duff had gone, not that he'd stay in the Irish squad, but I think if he had gone to America instead of Australia, it would have been, you know, he would have been playing at a higher level. So I think the US is a potential breeding ground for Irish players, and God knows we could exploit the granny rule out there. So in terms of this goalkeeper, I don't know anything about this goalkeeper, Dave, but he's a young guy. As we've been discussing, our number two goalkeeper could potentially be moving to Man City to sit on the bench. So any keeper that's getting game time deserves to be in the squad over a guy that's picking splinters out of his backside.
Neil, James mentioned Damien Duff, and of course his move to the Melbourne City. He joins players like Andy Keogh and Miller in Liam Miller in Australia. Is it going to turn into another alternative location for players, like kind of like the MLS is, as we said? Robbie Keane is out there now. Australia seems to be the place to go as well.
I hope not. I was over in Australia a couple of years ago, and I went to a match. I think it was the Melbourne Derby over there at the time. And I saw one of the centre halves for Melbourne step up into the other team's half and try to play offside. So if you saw that in the Phoenix Park, to use a Dunphyism, you'd be laughing. So I thought the Standard, do you know what? The Standard was brutal, and the difference is they have lovely stadiums. And I often think when you go to League of Ireland matches, the Standard is really good, but the stadiums are make you think that the Standard is poor, if you know what I mean. The stadiums over in Australia are beautiful. It's a family outing, but the Standard of football is, well, it was a couple of years ago. Maybe it's improved in the last year or two. I know Emil Heskey is banging in the goals and Liam Miller is running the show for Perth Glory. So maybe that gives you an indication of the Standard over there.
Well, isn't that what they say? It looks like a more glamorous option when they look at TV highlights and they see matches and the crowd going mental in big stadiums and a good, you know, a great atmosphere. It's like, oh, I'd like a bit of that.
Yeah, it's style over substance. I think the League of Ireland is a far higher standard. That's just that's purely from going to one or two games when I was over there. I just thought the defending was absolutely awful. The people in the crowd, their education of football was brutal, a lot of them. Now I know there's strong Greek and Italian groups where the football before the Australian League, a lot of the teams who played over there came from the Greek communities and the Italian community, so there'll be a lot of knowledge about football there. But they're growing the game, and they're definitely it's a sport that people go to when the Aussie rules is finished, or the cricket or the rugby league is finished, and they go along to it. So the knowledge of basics like the offside rule, I was laughing when I was in the stadium. It was just shocking to see a player step up into the other team's half and try to play offside.
Yeah, John, Damien Duff making the move there. It'll be a little bit of rejuvenation of his career. I know he's been, in recent times, he's been quite unlucky with injuries there at Fulham ruling him out. But when he does get a consistent run of games, he's still got it. You know, he has bags of ability. You'd think he'll make an impact over there?
He does. I'm sure he will. And at this stage of his career, I mean, I think he deserves it, you know, to go and try something else different. I mean, I'm sure he could probably get a championship club or somewhere else. But I wouldn't begrudge him going over to go and enjoy them. I'm sure he can do. I'm not going to claim to be too up to date on the state of Australian soccer at the moment, but I'm sure it'll be a step down and it'll be kind of easier and you'll enjoy the weather and everything like that. Similar enough to Robbie Keane, although Robbie is still playing at the top level. But I'm sure he will make an impact. He still has it. He's that type of player. He adapted his game a little bit, I think, as he lost a bit of pace as he got older, which showed he was always a kind of clever footballer. I mean, he'd be less about pace. Similar enough to Ryan Giggs, as in starting on the wing and moving inside as the pace deteriorated a bit. But yeah, I'm sure he's the type of player who always has that sort of football brain and be one step ahead, and he'd be able to use that over there. And I'm sure they're delighted to have him as well, because they'd be getting a player with a lot of experience and a lot of skill as well.
Yeah. James, just to, or Pete, I'll come to you on this. Is Robbie Keane the prime example of what you should do if you're going to finish your career, or we'll say spend the next 5 years or more of your career in another league? What Robbie Keane has managed at LA Galaxy has been quite phenomenal, and it just shows how seriously he was. He kind of proved a lot of skeptics wrong, and perhaps Damien can do something similar.
Yeah, I think he has done, and I think. But if you look at Keane throughout his career, he was never prepared to sit on the bench. The time he did the shuffle back and forth between Liverpool and Spurs, he said, "Look, he'll let me get back there. I just want to play every week." He went to the States. He wasn't prepared to go there on holidays. He's gone there to extend his career and to play. I think Duffer is only going to go to Australia for a year. I was listening to an interview with him within the last week or two on one of the radio stations. I can't remember which one it was. And he's going to say, "I'm going to go out and try this. A new project." It's the Man City guys who own New York City and the Melbourne franchise. They're pumping a huge amount of money into it. So he's going to go out there and check that out. And I think he intends to play for another two or three seasons. Where that is remains to be seen. Maybe he'll end up back in New York playing with New York City. But I think, as the lads have said, Duffer has shown over the years is that he's a very clever player, and he has adjusted his game as the years have gone by. He's always been a wonderful player to watch. He's one of my favourite players ever, and I think he won't go to Australia for the holiday. That's for certain, and he'll always represent himself and the country very, very well. So, you know, we look forward to seeing him playing wherever it is for the next two or three years anyway.
And there could be some battles there. I mean, we have Andy Keogh gone over, and we have Liam Miller over there as well. I mean, when with more Irish gone over, there's no doubt Irish fans will be wanting to take a gander of it, and maybe the A-League website will be getting more searches and hits from Ireland than ever before. And, you know, people over here will be no doubt keeping up to date, and the vast majority of Irish that are in Australia as well, they'll be interested in that.
Yeah, well, there's a huge amount of Irish guys have emigrated there in the last 5 or 6 years. And, of course, there's the old convict stock that are out there for the last 150 years or whatever it was. So, you know, there's a huge Irish population out there. And the Aussies are not just soccer, but they're sports mad. I mean, they support any number of sports. And they're big into it. And if there's an investment in the A-League out there, and have the sheikhs coming in with the money and others, then the standard will improve exponentially, I would say.
Do you think, James, to wrap it up with yourself, a final point on Australia, as we've seemed to be talking about, they're obviously in the World Cup, and as Pete was saying, they're looking for money, or they could really develop their own league with a bit of money and a little bit of investment, and it would take a good World Cup for them to attract that, you know. But it's going to be very difficult, because we see the standard of players that they have at the World Cup, and it hasn't been pretty on the eye for them.
No, but it's like Ireland back in 1990, Dave, you know.
Kicking legs.
No, but seeing your team at the World Cup, that's what inspires kids to go out and play. So if you're talking about developing the game in Australia, these are the guys they're looking up for. There's not many people talking about the Irish team this summer, I'm afraid, you know, because we're not in the tournament. And even when we were in the last one, they certainly weren't enthused by what they saw. But just quickly on Duffer, at least it's nice to see another Irishman go to Australia with a job lined up, Dave.
I think a lot of people will go along with that one, James. He's not in it for the party, but in it to play. That's terrific. Lads, thanks a million for joining me on the Why Big Football Show this week. I look forward to the pleasure of your company next week, where we'll review all the goings on at the World Cup and what it might mean from an Irish point of view. Of course, Germany, the big winners this week in the World Cup, and they're going to be taking on Ireland in the qualifiers for the Euros. For myself, Dave O'Grady, and all the team here, have a very good evening.